Psychology is all around us. Psychological elements can be seen throughout the lifespan, from birth until death. Films are a wonderful tool to explain psychological theory and occurrences in our lives. Characters interact within each frame of film's psychological concepts. The films we remember most and view multiple times engage us by capturing the presence of these psychological dynamics in an authentic way.
I invite you to join me, Dr. Catherine Marshall Woods, licensed clinical psychologist and film consultant, and my guest today, Adam Joel, of the newly released film, The Last Drop, to discuss the best psychology in film.
Hi, Adam. How are you today?
Good. How are you?
Good. Thank you again for coming on Best Psychology in Film.
Yeah, excited to be here.
Well, tell us a little bit about your feature film, The Last Drop.
Yeah, so The Last Drop is a short sci-fi film about relationship abuse inspired by the memories of real survivors, myself included. So the story follows a young couple, Sophia and Anthony, who engage with this service called a retrospect that links couples' minds to relive shared memories. And as they're reliving their meet cute, their first date, and all these fun moments, some jealousy starts to come up, and we see Anthony start trying to change her memories, basically gaslighting her in real time. So it's all about how most survivors of relationship abuse only recognize the early signs in hindsight.
Mm-hmm. I love how you described their meet cute, very film making terminology here. It is interesting that you've just decided to make a film about emotional abuse and using past survivors' experiences. How did you go about doing that? Did you interview past survivors? How did you get access to their stories?
Yeah, that's a great question. So when I was initially experiencing abuse, I was very much a closed book. Nobody knew for the 3-4 years that I was going through that. And now I'm the total opposite. My attitude is share early, share often. So when I'm sharing that I'm doing this film about relationship abuse, there are survivors everywhere. And so when I share first, it sometimes opens that door. And I use what I call a communal storytelling method, which means rather than just diving into my own story, the characters on screen and the moments on screen are a representation of a big sort of mishmash of different survivor stories and expert stories who we consulted as well. I just wanted to make sure we included moments, people of different experiences and backgrounds who faced abuse. I wanted a lot of people to connect with the film, and rather than leave the final film to be a surprise, I wanted to get constant feedback and input from other folks. I actually have like a 50-page Google Doc that just says feedback. And I really am a nut about including other people's thoughts in my films.
Well, without further ado, why don't we allow the audience to watch a little clip of the film and then we'll come right back.
Hey there. Do you want to feel closer to the people you care about? Do you ever wish you could relive a memory? Well, now you can with Retrospect. Our patented technology lets you and your loved one relive your favorite shared memories together. Reconnect with Retrospect.
This is crazy. We're inside our own memories.
Where do you want to go first?
Warning. Retrospect may cause panic attacks, memory loss, depression, and symptoms of PTSD.
Well, we were just able to see a small clip of the last drop, which is really a nice teaser and really, I'm sure, quite engaging for people to want to be able to see more. The one thing that I really take from the clip is how passionately in love this couple appears through what we see. And then it becomes a little more dark, like there's something that's secret, that's an undercurrent regarding the conflicts that he's feeling about the relationship. But I also noticed from her response, she's less aware of what he may be feeling at that time. Do you feel like that's an aspect of what you learned through talking to the survivors that you had, is that the person who's experiencing the abuse is less knowledgeable about what's happening when it's happening to them?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think in my own experience as a survivor of abuse, I was very much in love, very much dead set on marrying my high school sweetheart. And I felt very unshakable in that. And I think people think of abusive relationships as something that's just has that fear that we see in Hollywood movies. And there are plenty of moments with that fear, but I think what they don't realize is how much love there can be in abusive relationships. And that's what makes it really toxic and really cyclical of, I think people instinctively think in healthy relationships, I would do anything for the person I love, but you don't think about how that instinct could be taken advantage of if I feel like it's my job to cheer up my significant other, what if their rules keep changing and they're impossible to make happy? And what if they take advantage of that instinct to be a caretaker? So I think that, especially for young couples, but it can happen to anyone. You can see sacrifice as a love language and you think, I must do this really hard, painful part of the relationship in order to quote unquote, earn the good part. But I think it's really toxic and sacrifice is not a real love language and not a successful one. So I definitely find a common factor with folks realizing they're in an abusive relationship late. And that's what I'm trying to change.
That is a very admirable desire that you are creating a film in order to educate the public regarding emotional abuse, in order for it to be able to elucidate to other people what it looks like, and hopefully be able to have people make decisions that makes them more safe within their relationships. Mm-hmm. So thank you for this work. It is interesting too, is that you mentioned that individuals are going through this and they're experiencing love at the same time, but it also is a sacrifice, almost as if the earning of it makes the love conditional rather than unconditional. Do you also find that to be the case within your film?
Yeah, it's really tricky. I really struggle with the term unconditional love because I think conditional love, you know, can be used by someone, like that can be leveraged by someone to get what they want. So if you think of the lead in that trailer we just saw, or Anthony, or an abusive person, they could withhold love. And that's a form of abuse, that someone withholding affection, whether it's physical affection or attention, or even just these long silent treatments, acting like someone doesn't exist. That's a form of abuse called withholding that I learned about after my relationship. So when you think about conditional love, you can see how that could come up in an abusive relationship. But unconditional love is also can be scary too, if you're with the wrong person. This idea that I'm in it no matter what. So what I try to do with my film, and especially towards the ending, is separate this idea of loving and leaving. So I think a lot of conventional Hollywood movies have the idea that if you're with someone, if you love them, it means you're with them no matter what. But I think that phrase, no matter what, is scary. So while you can't control who you love, you can control who you leave or who you spend time with. So I think it's important that people learn faster than I did the idea that you can love someone and still leave them because of how they treat you. So loving and leaving, two separate things.
Well, you know, I have to ask, because, you know, you mentioned that you've had this experience of abuse within your relationship. And then you decided, though, to make a film that was a culmination, not just of your experience, but other individuals' experiences. Why not make a film that was just a reflection of what you went through?
That's a great question. So the first inspiration for the film came from talking with another survivor. And that's sort of where that courage comes to even speak out, is to connect with someone else on an individual level first. So I connected with a friend who shared that experience of like, boom, a wake up moment. And suddenly all your memories start changing, because whatever your personal trigger is, whatever that line someone crossed, suddenly you realize this is wrong, how I've been treated. And all these memories that seemed, you know, like the ups and downs of romance, suddenly you realize, no, this actually isn't normal romance, this is abuse. So I became very interested in that wake up call moment. And that became sort of a pivotal scene in the film that I wrote around. So the first, I don't know, 40, 50 drafts of the screenplay were about my friend's experience. My friend who had a husband who was with her partner for 10 years, who had kids, all these things I never experienced. And I think that was an emotional buffer for me, is I could write about someone else's experience. But then I found I was lacking specifics writing outside my own experience, like you're suggesting. And I did a full page one rewrite based much closer on my own experience as a young man experiencing abuse in high school and college. And I was able to flesh in all these details that were getting closer to my experience. The genders of the main characters are still flipped from my experience as a male survivor. And that's something I definitely struggled with. A lot of folks would say, hey, as you in rooms with survivors and screenings, you might want to connect with the statistics of, you know, female survivors experiencing abuse more often. And it's tricky because I do want to write from my own experience. I also want to match the world and what the world is experiencing. And oftentimes, I also learn that male survivors underreport abuse. So I think, to answer long story short, I think writing a story with other people's stories in there, not just my own, served that as an emotional buffer for me to be able to tackle this trauma. But then it also made me feel like I was connecting with other people, and it was like a test screening in a way. Is I want to incorporate multiple people's experience so multiple different types of audience members can walk away feeling like they're connected.
That's, I think, a really great idea. You actually mentioned the how when you were actually writing the script and you wrote it from your friend's perspective, and how that came with greater ease to you. And psychologically, we would consider that a way of displacing, right? That there's mm-hmm. some separation. So it does make it easier for you to be able to create this and not necessarily get so caught up in the emotional experience as much. But then there is a richness that comes from adding yourself to this. You are the writer. You do yeah. have these wonderful experiences and the experiences that were really challenging within your relationship yeah. and with your psyche. And so I imagine you adding yourself made the film that much richer.
And I will share that a writer friend of mine made the suggestion that I think helped me dig into the details, where in certain drafts of the screenplay, I use my name and my abusive ex-partner's name. And I knew those would never be in the final film, but I think it opened up some details, some specifics, some memories, and writing in that really personal way where that's my name on the page and that's her name on the page. And then changing it for the final draft to what ended up being Sophia and Anthony, where the genders were reversed from my own experience. And I had made some adjustments for that. But yeah, I think there's this push and pull of getting personal, but not too personal, that comes with writing about your own experience.
Yeah, it's just almost as if you were journaling rather than making a screenplay.
Exactly. And it is all about memories. And unfortunately, so many survivors are examining their memories, and my characters are going on a memory adventure. So I'm hoping that future generations can learn through shows like yours that are helping people out, and through films like mine that are saying, hey, let's look at the early signs of abuse, not the really vile things that come later, but what are those first serious red flags of boundaries crossed?
Well, when we come back, we're going to talk a little bit about how you displayed emotional abuse within your film, because I do feel like it's unique in the way that you went about doing so, rather than in other films that we could call upon to be able to think about being able to understand abuse. So when we come back, I'd love for us to dive into that a little bit as well.
Absolutely.
I don't know. so sad? You've got a roof over your head.
Bro, you gotta stop with that depression stuff. That's a white people thing.
Escúchame, en esta casa, los hombres no lloran.
You all right?
It just feels like it's coming from everywhere.
Do you want to talk about it?
Thanks for hearing me out, bro. Appreciate it.
You can talk to me if you're feeling sad.
Whenever you need to talk, I'm here, okay?
Welcome back. Today, we are talking to Adam Joel, the writer of The Last Drop. This is a phenomenal film about emotional abuse, and he is here to speak with us today regarding how he's made it. And thank you again, Adam, for joining us.
Happy to be here.
One of the things that I found so interesting about your film is that it is about emotional abuse, and you see a trajectory of the characters going through how the abuse becomes heightened over time. But there is no physical abuse that comes with it, which in most films, we do get to see how emotional abuse turns into physical abuse. What made you decide not to go that route?
Yeah, so I think oftentimes Hollywood movies go for what I'd call like the most cinematic version of abuse, which tends to be violent and almost mirroring action movies. And it's touching on the most violent and aggressive forms of abuse that typically won't show up on your first few dates and aren't a great warning sign. And I've talked with survivors who only realized their relationship was abusive when it matched the movies. And by then it's like getting hit in the face while you're holding your child was one friend of mine's experience. And that's the trigger where it said, hey, this matches the movies now. And so much has happened by then. She's married, she has a kid, she's experienced all these other forms of abuse that didn't trigger a wake-up call. So we specifically went about making a movie about the earlier forms of abuse, like isolation tactics. So we start seeing our main character, Sophia, her friends and family members disappear from her memories when Anthony gets jealous. So this idea of your world shrinking down, your favorite passions, hobbies, friend groups, everything shrinking down and disappearing around you is our sort of sci-fi way of depicting what emotional abuse looks like. And there's a few different metaphors we use to depict that, but we're trying to make the least visible forms of abuse visible through the power of filmmaking.
You know, it's interesting that you said what it looks like. I would even I wonder if that's also what it feels like, is that someone is shrinking and shrinking in order to accommodate the relationship.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, as a survivor, it can be a defense mechanism to shrink yourself. You know what makes your partner angry, even if it's very inconsistent. And so suddenly you're walking on eggshells around all these different triggers. For some people, I had a friend who said, I couldn't watch movies with nudity in it, because even that would trigger my partner's jealousy. For me, I remember carpooling with a guy, and that's a scene that went into the movie. I mean, carpooling with someone of the opposite gender could be a trigger for someone's jealousy. So oftentimes you see our character, Sophia, representing other survivors, avoiding these triggers that could make her partner angry.
I do wonder, I mean, you're really highlighting the longevity a relationship could have, even with the components of abuse, specifically emotional abuse that happens, and how long standing someone can be in a relationship where it is emotionally abusive and they have not been hit or physically assaulted. And, some people would wonder who watch this film, for an example, or even hear the narratives of people who've survived abuse that says, what would make you stay or what would keep you there? And what I'm hearing from you is that emotional abuse is very silent and very sneaky, really, in some ways, is that it sneaks into relationships and it doesn't necessarily feel like abuse until many times in retrospect, unfortunately.
Yeah, and I think that's part of the education system we want to change, because if you look at professionals who work in spheres of abuse, their definitions are very different from what we have in the public and what's limited health classes teach in school. So while Sophia does experience some forms of physical abuse, like Anthony pinches her leg under the table to stop her speaking up and saying something he doesn't want her to say, or sexual abuse within a relationship where consent can be even blurrier than we talk about with strangers. I think it is harder to notice those things in a relationship where that has loving moments. So people can stay for love, people can stay out of fear, and leaving is statistically the most dangerous time for a survivor. So oftentimes survivors are making very strategic, calculated decisions for their own well-being. And unfortunately, that sometimes means staying a lot longer than they want to. But yeah, I encourage folks to tell someone else, give multiple people a chance at being that trusted person you confide in. Whether it's friends, family, or experts, because an abuser wants you to feel alone. And that's part of what makes it so tough to get any momentum to begin leaving. But yeah, I encourage folks to give multiple people a chance in your life to be that helper.
Well, one of the things you said earlier, Adam, is that you wanted to make the distinction in the film that there is a difference between loving and leaving. What made that important for you to highlight?
Yeah, I think it is that question that folks ask of why did you stay, which you ask very gently, but sometimes can be an offensive question for survivors. And I wanted to make clear that oftentimes there is a lot of love in a relationship like this. And the film, basically, I directed it to be a romance that breaks down. So it's not a horror movie where I'm working with the musical composer to say, when we first see Anthony, it should feel like love, just like when you first start dating someone. So we wanted to put the viewer in the shoes of someone who's falling in love first. And then, a clever and strategic, sneaky abuser will lead with their best qualities. And that's what kind of can suck you in. So it was important to us that we have that romance genre and those romance tropes, like a meet cute in the film, to mirror the experience of a survivor who is first falling in love and then noticing something's wrong.
What would you like to happen with this film? How would you like it to influence the public?
Absolutely. So we're launching a grassroots screening campaign of The Last Drop with educators, social workers, mental health professionals, a lot of schools and colleges, and advocates. So the idea is that we're self-distributing this film through thelastdropfilm.com to use this film as a teaching tool and an advocacy tool in partnership with experts. So we have discussion guides we're distributing alongside the film. Folks who are using it right now, we've already used this film for fundraising events where mental health organizations have raised as much as $10,000. Campus safety officer recently screened this film or used this film, and they're changing the way they react to crises on their campus. And that's the impact we're really excited to have, as well as just validating survivors who, you know, one person watched the film and said, I feel like I just watched half my relationship on screen for experiences I thought I was alone for. So there's that emotional connection we want to have with survivors. There's the experts we want to support through screening events. And we want to screen to kids, you know, middle schoolers and high schoolers, and we're building those connections. So for folks who are watching or listening, I encourage you to book a screening and use the film to support your cause and your community. And from a personal perspective, I'd love for people to start reflecting on the way they've treated people and the way they've been treated in relationships. And one little mantra I have, a way of remembering how to check on emotional abuse that doesn't feel visible, is like, you know, when you're leaving the house and you sort of go phone, wallet, keys, and you check what's on you and you make sure you have the important things. I see that sort of a mnemonic device of phone, wallet, keys. Your phone represents like my people. This is who I talk to. These are the people I can connect with. Is anyone monitoring my phone in any way or my social circle? My wallet represents, you know, my spending power. Is anyone, am I experiencing financial abuse or just my choices? So My wallet is also representative of like of an accessory. This is a choice I have. Do my choices feel supervised or supported? And then there's my keys. That's my freedom to go places. Can I go to that reunion? Can I go hang out with that friend without jealousy being an issue? So to me, phone, wallet, keys is like my people, my choices, and my freedom. And so I encourage people to start checking on these less physical parts of a relationship and seeing, are they healthy? Beyond just loving someone, how are they treating me and how am I treating them? So that's the impact I really want to have.
That is such a powerful way to leave our audiences with, this way of being able to really do a self-evaluation of what's happening within their relationships to ensure that their relationships are not just healthy, but also really safe for them to be in. Mm-hmm. Thank you, Adam, for providing them.
Thanks so much for having me on.
Of course. One literally final question is, how can people get in contact with you directly or, again, to book a screening?
Absolutely. So I recommend you go to thelastdropfilm.com, where we have contact information there. You can learn a bit more about the film. If you reach out to us, we can send you a free screening link if you're interested in hosting your own event. So we're working with conferences and educators, as I mentioned. So please go to thelastdropfilm.com. You'll reach us, you'll reach me specifically, and we can have a conversation about how this film could support your work and your community.
Thank you so much, Adam, for coming on. I really appreciate it. This message is so important. It's very important for individuals, adults, and also younger individuals who are just starting intimate relationships to be able to have this sort of knowledge going into what relationships can look like. And again, to hopefully have them have safe, very safe and healthy relationships in the future. So thank you for this.
Yeah, thank you so much. I really appreciate being on your show.
Well, we'll see you next time on Best Psychology in Film. If you'd like to find me, please find me on Instagram at PsychMindedMedia. Have a good one.